Good morning. Here we are in the midst of spring celebrations, Easter Sunday, and I think Tuesday is the last day of Passover. So we have two powerful noticings of the change of seasons through the Christian and Jewish tradition. And of course, there are observances of spring all around the country, all around the world, really, depending on which hemisphere you're in, whether or not you're celebrating spring or autumn. I was reading about some of the celebrations that are filled with song and dance. In Southeast Asia, they throw red dye on one another. You know, there are all these wonderful ways of saying, hey, you know, the winter's over. But, you know, I think particularly for us here in New York, you know, we have these bare, lifeless trees that kind of in the parks and on the streets, and then suddenly there are these blossoms everywhere, and it's wonderful to see the pear trees all along the different streets. So I took a few lines from the Song of Songs to encourage you. Today you go forth in the month of spring. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers are seen in the land. The time of the nightingale is come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree brings forth perfume in its green figs, and the vines with young grapes are fragrant. You know, that was written a long time ago. It's from the Old Testament. How ancient humans appreciated the sights and sounds of spring, of our planet Earth, as it returns to giving us delight. You know, if you go to Central Park on any day these days, you're going to find birders with binoculars, looking at the birds in the park. Go to the farmer's market. I was so shocked last week when I went to the farmer's market. It's like five times as many people are usually there are there now, looking for the early produce that's coming out of the ground. You know, spring celebrates a kind of renewal, shedding of old skin. So it can be kind of uncomfortable for us sometimes. Just change. And it calls us to pay attention to the world that we're in. And I would say that now more than ever, we need to love and appreciate our spring, and do what we can to ensure that spring can continue on this earth that we share with all beings. Over the past half century, you know, we have begun to realize the great harm that has been caused to the earth, our home. We've come to realize that fossil fuels are destroying our air and our natural protections of the whole planet, polluting our water and the integrity of our soil. Cutting down trees all over the world, you know, we do that to build buildings, to have more cattle, so so that more beef will be produced. But those trees were there sequestering, pulling in the poisons in the air. And what we're seeing nowadays is masses of people over the planet who are moving away from places of famine and drought. So the whole issue of immigration has very much to do with climate justice. When there's no water and no way to grow food, people move. They go try to get into Europe, into the Americas, and they're pushed away. And, you know, we could think about it, it's not the Earth's problem. It's our problem. You know, I know it's a lovely spring day and it's Easter Sunday, and I'm reminding you that we have a serious problem. Dogen, who was a Japanese, medieval Japanese philosopher monk, wrote this. He was the one that founded our line of Zen, so we quote him a lot, Dogen Zenji. It is not the case simply that there is water in the world. Within the world of water, there is a world. And this is true not only within water, within clouds as well, there is a world of sentient beings. Within wind, there is a world of sentient beings. Within fire, there is a world of sentient beings. Within earth, there is a world of sentient beings. Within the Dharma realm, there is a world of sentient beings. Within a single blade of grass, there is a world of sentient beings. Wherever there is a world of sentient beings, there inevitably is the world of Buddhas. The reason this is so, we should study carefully. Within Earth, there's a world of sentient beings. Within the Dharma realm, there is a world of sentient beings. Within a single blade of grass, there is a world of sentient beings. You know, I know it's hard to take in the complexity of his language when it's just being recited to you, but he's reminding us of the utter interbeingness of all things, of how we are in the water, and the water is in us. Within everything that we can imagine, there is this world of interpermeability. And I would say even more so when we slowly become aware of that. And in our simple daily zazen is the way that we can potentiate our awareness of our integration, of our interdependence with everything that exists. That's how we know, as we say in Zen, who we really are. Typically, when we first say that to people, we want people to come to Zen, you'll find out who you really are. And everyone imagines that it's all about, you know, getting the self, the presentation of self in everyday life in appropriate form. But very gradually, it becomes apparent that who we really are is much bigger than our little skin bag. That's really important, because we become responsible for everything. So we can look at our Hudson River out there and realize that it's not separate from us, except when we separate it from our consciousness. We are all a part of that magnificent river that flows both ways. So I wonder, when you came here this morning, what you might have experienced of spring on your way here. Maybe it was a blossom, a breeze, a bit of green where there wasn't any green before. Or maybe the sound of a warbler heading north. You know, a bunch of warblers in town right now. I'm on a bird list, so I get notices about what bird is where and what park, you know, and there was an amazing thing. In Chelsea, there was a cattle egret, which is a rather large bird that does not belong in New York City. And everyone's been taking his picture. So this is spring in New York. What did you experience of spring in New York this morning, I wonder? Did you recognize that you're not separate from that spring? That the spring is also in you? That it's not other? If you did have a slight feeling of that, you can understand what it's like to open yourself to the truth of your relationship with everything that exists, and, as I said before, your responsibility. You need to make a space in your life for your offering of service to the world, no matter how small or how big, to offer something to the world. There was a kind of wonderful rebellious Japanese Zen monk by the name of Kodo Sawaki, and he put it this way: the sky and the earth make offerings. Air, water, plants, animals, human beings all make offerings. Every being makes offerings to each other. We only live within this relationship of making offerings. It has nothing to do with whether or not you are grateful. All of us live in this relationship of offerings. We now may not be aware of it, or as he says, we may not be grateful for the offerings that we're being offered, but they are always there. We always live within this relationship. And that's the key to our freedom. You know, we tend not to see that because we do think of ourself as a kind of something that ends at the edge of our skin. That's all we are. That's an important aspect of what we are, of course. That's what has action in the world. But only in relation to others. You may be familiar with the philosophy, the African, is a very old African philosophy called Ubuntu. I think we've spoken about it a few times. The idea is that the self is an acquired characteristic. The baby is born with no self. And the self is developed and grows as a result of interacting with everything that it encounters. There's a book called African Religions and Philosophy, and the philosopher John Mbiti explained the concept this way. It sounds so Buddhist to me. I am because we are, and since we are, therefore I am. I am because we are, and therefore, since we are, therefore I am. So it's not to get so lost in this idea, the theory of interrelationship, that we lose the self. No, the self is there, active and alive. But it's only active insofar as it has been formed by its interactions with all of reality. And out of that arises our responsibility to care for everything. For everything. And that's the primary teaching of the Avatamsaka Sutra. And it is what Shakyamuni is said to have said in the Zen version of his enlightenment moment. I, the great earth, and all sentient beings are simultaneously enlightened. It wasn't I, Shakyamuni, have been working so hard, I'm now enlightened. But he was simultaneously enlightened with the earth itself and all beings. He recognized his relationship with everything. So it's easy to understand that from a theoretical point of view, but in our daily lives, maybe not so much. How often are we able to realize that everything we encounter is, in a way, also a part of us? That our mind and our heart that's in us is also constantly interacting. The people and places and things around us, in our history, in our past. We are constantly being recreated in each moment, whether we realize it or not. So, you know, I would also notice that we have to be on our guard because there are also a lot of dark forces out there. We're becoming more aware of them these days. They've always been there, but we're becoming more aware. By the expression of the three poisons, greed, anger, and ignorance in our political system, in our markets, in our media, greed, anger, and ignorance can be absorbed as business as usual if we're not careful. We need to examine constantly our ways of thinking. We are slipping into a kind of mindset of grasping or hurting or a narrow view of what it is to live. I would say our ethics are being challenged every day by the world we live in. It's so easy to just began to accept that that's the way things are. That greed is the primary motivator. That ill will is appropriate to the other. That we are ignorant, that we are part of a wholeness. So that's why we sit zazen. I mean, at first we sit zazen to take care of our suffering small self, but gradually we become aware of our interrelationality, and we become softer, more aware of our interdependence. We begin to realize that we're responsible for something outside of ourselves. The people around us, the city we live in, the earth itself. And I think it's easier for those of us who live in a city, as we do, to be more aware of the suffering of other humans, other people. rather than being aware of the suffering of the earth. I think it's normal, not surprising. And I think many of us really only began to understand the problems of the earth itself and climate change through the distress of the people who are affected by what's happening. The displacement of homes, you know, livelihoods all around the world, but very specifically right here in our country. Not to be missed. But if we expand our consciousness a little bit, we realize you could imagine the globe, the earth itself is crying, is suffering. It can't breathe. It's too hot. The cooling, you know, we had this great, wonderful system where the Arctic and the Antarctic took care of the seasons, took care of the cooling of the earth. And they're melting. You can go online and just watch the glaciers falling just all the time. Green forests turned to desert in Africa and South America. Consider the earth as your body. When something happens to our body, we want to take care of it. But are we taking care of our body, really? Dogen says, we study the self, and when we study the self, we forget the self, and when we forget the self, we are enlightened by the 10,000 things. So our practice here, which begins to look like, who am I, becomes, I am everything, and I am responsible for everything. It's a wonderful thing to drop that idea of separateness and allow ourselves to be awakened by everything that happens, the good and the bad, to wake up. So I want to urge us all to use the skills that we have. Everyone in this room has a different skill set, different set of ways that we can make a difference. Whether you're writers or artists, therapists, all the different kinds of ways that you can make a difference. We can't deny what's going on. And I think that, you know, if you're like, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming, I don't know what to do about it, begin just as an example to others, you know, ordinary things. Maybe you could begin by not using plastic bags. Would that be so hard? Plastic bags are made of petroleum. They pollute the environment. They don't decompose. They're a threat to the animals and fish that help to keep the earth in a state of health. What would it be like to buy yourself a reusable bag that you keep in your pocket or in your pocketbook? You go to the store, you pull out your bag, and the person behind you sees that. The person serving you sees that. It's not a huge thing, But you made an example and pass it on, whether you realize it or not. You can guilt people into using. Or reconnect with your garbage. I was part of a study recently that was done, and they asked us to, in my apartment building, to weigh all the wet garbage, all the vegetable garbage that we had for a week's time, gave me a scale, and said that, you know, if you complete the study, you get to keep the scale. So it was very interesting. It raised my consciousness enormously about certain things. You know, from time to time, I've tried to use the composting at 14th Street at the farmer's market. But, you know, it's like, it's a lot of trouble. You have to take your food garbage and put it in the freezer for a week, and then remember to take it out and take it to the farmer's market. But this became, you know, suddenly there's an awareness of what you're doing with your refuge and how much there is. And where is that going, you know, and what is this landfill? And a whole kind of set of new ways of looking at how a single person who's not like a huge family and not someone who consumes a tremendous amount of packaging and so forth can affect everything else. There's so much. But probably the most important thing is to resist the greedy and ignorant political and economic forces that are trying to destroy the processes and the progress that we've made so far. Right now, in this country, there are efforts to further plunder the earth. Trump administration is focusing on the idea of unfettered capital greed. They're stopping the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and all of the energy of the EPA. We can't let that happen. We have to protest that violence to the earth. Coal is an old form of energy. We can let it rest now. We can look at wind and solar. You know that you can get solar energy now, right here in this city. You can sign up for it. So I know that I'm kind of been not like a real sunny Easter Sunday, third day before the end of Passover kind of Dharma talk today, but I am so concerned about the earth itself and our responsibility. We really have to pay attention and actively resist what is happening. We won't forgive ourselves if we don't. It's so important. As you know, so I'm going to be part of the Buddhist Global Reliefs, what do they call it? Rolling retreat, which is they're sending three buses to Washington, D.C. And you can get a ticket for that and come to Washington to the Climate Justice March. And on my bus, I'm going to have several other teachers. I'm going to have T.K. Nakagaki from the Pure Land tradition, Reverend Doyen Park from the Korean tradition, and Angela Dues from the Theravadan tradition. So we're going to be the triple gem going down. And if you're interested in that, you can just go online to the Buddhist Global Relief, and they have tickets for the bus. But if you don't go to the bus, at noon, Washington Square Park will have a march on the 29th. But also resist. We have to get in touch with anyone that you feel has any access to power. And that includes even though you think that your representatives and so forth are know what you feel, remind them. Remind them, call them, remind them. It's terribly important. And it is the active aspect of our meditation practice. We sit and face the wall, but we sit and face the wall so that we can act in an ethical way. And now is the time when we really have to use that energy. So let me end with a verse to hopefully calm you down after my rant. I'm so sorry, but anyway. Who am I? The swelling wave, the desiccated desert, the cherry blossom. Precious, delicate, falling. I beg you to help me.